Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we welcome back Erin Presley. She is the horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison, where she cares for the herb, wildflower, and pond gardens. And we'll be talking with her primarily about growing herbs. And of course, we'll be taking your calls as well. And I hope you join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Erin Presley, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me here today, Larry. Good to be here in the studio.
Yeah, it's good to see you in person again. How have things been at Olbrich Gardens? Are they kind of winding down? I don't really...
Oh, things never wind down at our garden, Larry. We are wrapping up the last couple nights of our immersive light art exhibit, Gleam, which has run through the months of September and October. So check that out on Friday and Saturday nights. And that's just one of the other ways that we are trying to reach new demographics and have the gardens open at different times, have activities to attract new people to gardening, and check out all the wonderful things happening at Olbrich. The gardens still look fantastic. We still have lots of flowers. The conservatory, of course, is always a haven when those days start to get cooler. So it's just never a dull moment.
And maybe explain a little more about Gleam. It is fantastic. I'll be seeing it either Friday tonight or Saturday night.
Yeah, so Gleam is a, I think it must be the fourth or fifth year of running Gleam at Olbrich. And we work with artists throughout the world that specialize in very site-specific installations. So they have their own conceptual designs that all include light in some realm. And then the evening viewing hours run from 7 to 10. You can buy your tickets online. And it's just a really great experience to be out in the garden at night, especially with the wonderful weather that we've been having. And up and through the next couple of weeks, too, the weather just looks fantastic.
Fantastic, for sure. And having visited Gleam in past years, it really they do a cool job with those lights. So I'm looking forward to seeing them again myself this weekend. Before we get started talking about herbs, I do want to spend a few minutes on the 2022 Madison Herb Fair, which is coming up in another week.
Yes, so exciting. The Herb Fair is always one of the, I think it's just really one of the best days of the year, sponsored by the Madison Herb Society. And it is a free event. It's at Olbrich. And it is on Saturday, November 5th, so about a week from today. And the theme of this year's Herb Fair is Easy Herbs for Everyone. Because I think most people would identify herbs as a really good gateway into gardening. And, herbs are easy care plants. They add just such a richness to your life and really are a good way to engage new gardeners. And then also a lot of herbs support pollinators as well. So it's a really, we're just trying to get everybody to just drink this, herbal tea of gardening and come to the Herb Fair. There's speakers, there's 22 vendors that are selling different herbal wares, and lots of people on hand to answer any questions that you might have. I'm giving a tour in the Olbrich's Herb Garden. So it's always a great day.
Yeah, you're one of the three speakers as well.
Yes, so there's a lineup of three amazing speakers. And again, the theme is easy herbs for everyone. So we just really want to engage people with this idea that everybody at heart, no matter if you have a yard or, I live in an apartment, and there's always space for plants in your life. And you can both give back to the environment around you, as well as gain this richness that herbs can really add to anybody's life. So we're just trying to make that accessible for people.
Free to get in, you might wind up spending a few bucks here.
Yeah, you might be going home with a little bit of tea or some plants or something like that. So they have amazing baked goods, so something for everybody.
And it's not like this is your first time around either. This is the 40th one or something, the Herb Fair.
That I don't know. I'm thinking that a lot of the people who are in the Herb Society definitely have, I mean, they make me feel like a newbie. So my talk is on basically just tips and tricks for aspiring herbies. So it's kind of like a intro crash course in herb gardening. But then we also have Christy and Katie from Pasture and Plenty here in Madison, and they'll be talking about using herbs in the kitchen and the garden. And then also Venice Williams from Alice's Garden Urban Farm in Milwaukee is going to be talking about some of their amazing community work and the ways that edibles can connect people and really give back to communities, too.
Oh, it sounds great. And you even brought something. I can't wait. I have to try.
I always have a trick up my sleeve.
You made some, let's see, the rose geranium lemonade.
Yes. So we have an amazing collection of scented geraniums in the herb garden, and they come in all different fragrances. There's citrus, minty, there's apricot, and there's also some wonderful rose-scented geraniums. So you can use those leaves to basically make an infusion and then add some syrup and lemon juice and make a really nice rose-flavored lemonade from the rose-scented geranium.
It is really good.
Isn't it good? Yeah, the rose comes in kind of right at the end, but it's not overpowering. And
delicious.
Very pleasant. And it's still nice lemonade drinking weather outside, too.
It is indeed. Well, we can take some calls, too, as we move along here. And you're certainly welcome to join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. And, well, let's take a call. Gary in Delavan, let's go to you. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
We planted marigolds this summer from seed in a pot, and they grew to be nearly 4 feet tall, and I've never seen marigolds that tall. I was wondering if she could explain or someone could.
Yeah, certainly. So there is actually just the genus that marigold is in. That's the genus Tegetes. And there are small versions that are less than 6 inches. There are, French and African marigolds that can be up to, like you're describing, 4 feet almost. And then there are also a lot of marigolds that have really interesting properties in the garden and in the kitchen. So I've been experimenting recently with a Peruvian marigold species, Tegetes minuta, that actually is used to make some really interesting Peruvian-style sauces. And so that one has kind of like a earthy, licorice-y flavor. There's Tegetes lucida, which is the Mexican mint marigold, which is a very diminutive little yellow-flowered marigold that has an anise flavor. Again, really good for a tea. And then a lot of marigolds also have, they have kind of a pungent essence to them. So they're noted for ostensibly being able to keep rabbits out of your garden. And they can also have soil improving qualities and reduce nematodes if you have problems with that type of kind of worm-like creature in your garden. There are also nematicidal marigolds. So there's just a surprise around every turn. So it's not unheard of that whatever variety you had purchased could easily have reached that 4 foot mark.
Gary, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Well, someone might say, why should I grow herbs anyway?
Oh, I think herbs
you'd
just
be the person
have so
best
much to offer. Yeah.
You're the perfect person to ask that question to.
Yeah. So one of my most, like, everybody likes to grow something that gives something back to you. And obviously so many herbs have so many helpful properties in the kitchen and in your medicine cabinet. But really the big thing for me is that they're generally pretty low maintenance plants, especially when you start looking at some of the more drought tolerant Mediterranean herbs. So if you think thyme, oregano, sage, rosemary, lavender, they really hardly take any water. So that's helpful if you have a hot, dry, sunny area or you're limited by time. Also, many herbs, since they do have a lot of oily, pungent smells to them, they're fairly pest resistant, which is really helpful. And then a lot of herbs also come from the mint family, and those are typically really good plants for pollinators and insects as well. So you're also giving back to the environment around you.
That's all good information. What about growing that? What are the easiest ones to grow?
I personally think that one of my favorite herbs is just, and I, you know, I think one of the themes of the herb fair this year is kind of keep it pretty basic. I just love parsley. It looks good at all seasons of the year. Easy to grow from seed. It's very cold tolerant, so it's one of the first things you can have in the spring and also the last in the fall. And additionally, the parsley leaves are edible, or they're a preferred food for swallowtail larvae. So you could be supporting a butterfly population by growing parsley too. Basil, again, too, super easy to grow from seed. Just needs some heat and sunlight. You know, just the classics, I think, is a good place to start, and then branch out into whatever really speaks to you as you continue your herbal journey.
So you live in an apartment, as you said, and so you may be growing yours inside, I'm guessing.
I do have a few things that I try to bring inside. One really important thing to remember when you are trying to grow herbs inside is even your sunniest window is not really a substitute for the actual sun. So I have a nice grow light in my apartment, and I have it on a timer so that, you know, it kind of emulates the natural daylight outside, and that supplemental light is really helpful for growing both just regular houseplants, but especially anything that you're expecting to produce as far as herbs go.
So grow lights, pretty much have to have.
Yes, I would say that is, and also just, you know, rotating your plants around too can really help. Make sure that you're always harvesting your herbs, because they want to be, you know, they're plants that they want to be giving to you. So make sure that you're picking and using them too. That's all part of the cycle of growing herbs.
And they get leggy if you don't, or what?
Right. Because a lot of times then the plants are just stretching and stretching to take advantage of the light that is available. So the more you can just, you know, use them and snip them back, keeps the plants healthier, free of diseases, and just keeps them producing.
Our guest today is Erin Presley, a horticulturist she's not the only one. I said the horticulturist earlier, but there are a lot of other horticulturists.
Yes, there's quite a number of us.
At Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm a member there, by the way, and enjoy that garden a lot during the course of the year. Erin takes care of the herb, the wildflower, and the pond gardens, and she also is really interested in native woodland gardening and low-maintenance and sustainable gardens and anything having to do with growing, cooking, and eating your own herbs and vegetables. I bet your apartment must have just great aromas emanating from it.
I try. I have a pretty good patio game going on right now, and I do have a small outdoor space down in the yard. I am growing ginger and turmeric this year, so that's fun. And looking forward to harvesting those soon. They did get a little frost-nipped, but I got to get out there and harvest those rhizomes and see what's been going on underneath the surface of the soil.
She is very enthusiastic, and it's always a pleasure to have her with us. And you can join in, too. Number to call with your own question about growing herbs, and we could take some of those other questions as well. 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Aubrey Ralph, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller with Erin Presley for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Erin Presley from the Old Brick Botanical Gardens. We've talked a bit about herbs with her. We could take some other questions as well as we move along at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Lori in River Falls. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I've been losing my basil for the last couple of years to a blight. And this year, it was going pretty well. I think because there was low moisture, the drought this year, the basil was looking fantastic. But then we got a little bit of rain, and August, the temperatures went cool a little bit. And then really within about 2 to 3 days, the basil started turning yellow, spotty, and it just, all the leaves fell off, and that was it for the basil. So I'm wondering, is it in the soil? Is it in the plants I buy? How can I grow basil and avoid this next year?
I am just so glad that you asked this question, because this is something that I always try to touch on in my talks, and it is the basil downy mildew. So what has been happening in the past, this disease has been prevalent, I think, probably in the past 15 to 20 years, more further south, and we're just starting to see it up here. But it is a fungal disease that can affect your basil plants once they have been growing over the course of the summer. So like you're describing, usually they start out pretty strong, and then around midsummer, as the humidity starts to mount, typically what it looks like at first is the tops of the leaves look kind of like sunburnt or scorched. They get kind of a weird tan color. And then if you flip the leaves over, sometimes you can see on the backside actually the fungal spores, which have kind of like a little bit of a black, like dusty look. And so it is a fungal disease, and it's actually pretty hard to avoid, except for our wonderful friends in the plant breeding world have been working on breeding strains of basil that are resistant to basil downy mildew. And the other thing that's really frustrating is, you know, your plants look good at first, and then later in the summer when those tomatoes are coming in and you're really excited to get some good summery dishes going, that's when the basil really starts to tank out. And it is most prevalent also on the typical kind of Italian large leaf or Genovese style basils. So usually if you're growing a little bit more spicy flavored basil, like licorice basil or Thai basil, those can hold out a little bit better. But your best bet is going to be to look for the downy mildew resistant basil varieties. And so if some of the top rated ones come from Rutgers University. So there's Rutgers Obsession, Passion, and Devotion are some good ones. There's a strain called Eleonora. And there may be others as well. So a good resource for, I think, anytime you're looking at growing any types of herbs or vegetables, I like to check out the Johnny's seed catalog. Johnny's is a supplier out of Maine, and they have a lot of good cultural information. So they'll have a good list and selection of seeds that are resistant to the downy mildew. Or now that the disease is becoming more well-known, if you are buying basil plants from a garden center in the spring, I know a few places around here will specifically mark what seed strain they are growing. And so you're going to want to look for, after the variety name of the basil, a lot of times the downy mildew resistance is just abbreviated as DMR. So look for those DMR strains of basil, specifically the Eleonora or any of the Rutgers DMR. And, you know, this is a well-known problem, and it's being consistently worked on. So I'm sure the resistance will get better, and there'll be more, a wider diversity of mildew-resistant offerings as well.
There you go, Lori. I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. There are probably other people that have had the same problem.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so frustrating, too, because you just feel like things were going so well, and then all of a sudden your plants are just dying. And, you know, even experienced people who've grown basil forever are kind of stumped by this. So that's the sort of thing that we're really trying to hit on with the upcoming herb fair. Is it's a big world out there. Things are always changing. So we want to make sure that people have just the most timely and useful information as they're getting going on their journey growing herbs.
And that was DRM?
DMR, downy mildew resistance.
There we
go. Yep.
DMR, that's what to look for. Marty in Douglas County, your turn. Hi, Marty.
Hey, good morning. This is not an herb question, but perhaps you can answer it anyway. I have a friend who is in love with her Mandevilla vines, and she's brought them in her house to try to overwinter them in the Duluth area. Do you have any suggestions on how she might be able to do that successfully?
Ooh.
Yeah, I personally have never experimented with overwintering that vine, but this is actually funny because a cousin of mine who lived in Port Washington just last week when the weather was getting cold texted me and said, oh, do you think I could bring this in for the winter? And I thought, I think the best bet is to kind of treat it maybe similarly to how you would treat when some people have pelargoniums or geraniums that they bring in and they store them in your basement in kind of a dormant state over the winter. So, you know, cut the plant back slightly, leave it in its original pot. If it was, I mean, probably the Mandevilla is not typically something that you're planting in a garden bed. So very likely that it would be growing in a pot already, and try to leave as much of that root system intact. And then just bring it down to the basement, let it kind of dry down, and then water it very minimally over the winter. And then just see what your luck is like next spring. I have never personally done that, but it seems like it should be a fairly decent bet. So let us know next summer how it's looking.
And she's not going to be able to keep it going all winter. I mean, she can't leave it put it in the window or something.
Especially with how viney they are, yeah. It just seems like it would get real leggy. And for some reason, that seems like one to me, too, that would be a real magnet for like whitefly or, you know, kind of just seems like it could potentially be a little bit of a bug attractor inside your house in a growing situation. So.
I'm chuckling a little bit here as I'm reading an email from Samantha in Whitehall. She called to ask if there's an herb she can grow inside that will keep spiders at bay.
Keeping spiders at bay? I can't really speak to that at all. I think that would be more in the realm of like witchcraft. So I'm more of a herb person, not a witch, but... Yeah, interesting question, though.
I don't know that there's any out there that would help, to be honest. Ellie in Madison emailed. She loves foraging for winter mint. Mentha aquatica. And here in South Central Wisconsin, she does it. It's her favorite herb for tea. And she knows it's invasive and growing it in a garden is not advisable. But can you grow it in containers? Could she propagate it from wild plants? So this is water mint or Mentha aquatica.
Yes, I am not personally familiar with that plant. It does seem like if it is a potentially invasive plant that is like found in large quantities, that a little bit of wild harvest to be able to propagate your own plants wouldn't be a problem from a conservation standpoint. But a good rule of thumb with any mints is either keep them in a really tightly controlled space if you're planting them in the ground. At Ulbrich, all of our different species of mint are growing in rings, a 12-inch steel ring that's sunk down into the ground, or definitely a container is a really good way to go. Another benefit of a container is you can really keep the mints super well watered and even kind of set them in like a dish of standing water, because typically they like a lot of water, especially this aquatic mint. But I have not had personal experience with that plant, so I would definitely do a little bit more digging before you go ahead and some internet digging, not maybe a physical digging right off, before you go ahead and try that technique.
Connie in Portage, your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I have, for the last 10 years, I've grown Mandevilla and Bougainvillea, and they climb clear up over my trellis. They're just gorgeous. But I take them to the greenhouse, and he overwinters them for me, and all he does is water them, and he said he fertilizes once in a while. But then they come back to me in the spring. And this year, I have the Mandevilla that I'm trying myself in the house because it had a little bug and he didn't want to take it into the greenhouse. So, but he did it in the greenhouse for 10 years.
Sounds like you got a good friend there.
Oh, yeah, it's Link's Greenhouse, by Portage. He's a wonderful man. And every year he's let me bring both my, well, I also have a jasmine plant. He lets me bring that there, too.
Sounds like you got to keep this guy on your good side.
Yeah, for sure. And good luck with trying it in your own home this time around. So you need to let us know how that turns out, for sure. I'd really like to know if it's successful. How the heck did you do it?
Yeah, and the Mandevilla, they're such just beautiful plants and a little bit more of a high-ticket item at a garden center. So if you do have success overwintering them and, having them get bigger and better every year, that would be really useful information.
Yeah, absolutely. Renee in Rice Lake emailed, she just heard you mention turmeric and ginger root. Can you provide more information on growing it? And can she also do it in zone 3 with some portions of her yard, zone 4, where should she purchase and how would she get started?
Yes, certainly. So there's kind of two avenues that you could take to get started. I prefer to buy in ginger or turmeric that is actually meant to be grown out from a certified, like, viral-free supplier. So the one that I typically use is actually out of Hawaii, and it's Biker Dude Organic Ginger. And they have a wide variety of different types of ginger and turmeric that you can buy. And then that is typically sent to you as early as February. Your other option is to get just from the grocery store ginger or turmeric. And I would recommend getting organic ginger or turmeric that hasn't been treated with a rooting or a sprout inhibitor. And so whichever avenue you're kind of going, you start with the rhizomes and you kind of break them up into some little pieces that have eyes, similar to like if you were planting a seed potato. So you look for some kind of the little pseudo bulbs or just little, sections of rhizome that you're going to use that are about the size of your thumb. And then you put them into a high humidity environment. So you would lay them out in an open flat or on just the top of a terracotta pot filled with potting soil. Just lay them right on the surface and then cover them with some sort of plastic cover because you really want the environment to stay really warm. So a heating mat or something is really helpful. And then keep the whole thing moist. And so after a certain number of weeks, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, you'll start to see little sprouts start to emerge from the rhizomes that you either purchased or bought. And then at that point is when you can plant them into some sort of other potting soil. So you can't really move these plants outside until it gets a lot warmer later in the summer, definitely after the last frost date, because any amount of cold is going to set the plants back by a lot. But then you'll start to see really tropical-looking foliage emerge from the ginger and turmeric plants, which is a whole added benefit in and of itself. And then the big thing is that you just want to keep them really well watered. They love sunlight, love heat. They love a lot of fertility. So they're kind of like, I wouldn't say a prima donna of a plant, but they're something that you're going to want to put your best effort and attention into and give a really prime growing condition throughout the course of the summer. And then you can harvest little chunks throughout the summer, but your main harvest is going to be happening around now. This is even a little late because the tops of the plants did get frosted, but the rhizomes underneath are perfectly fine. And then you just dig them up, and typically you could expect in a ideal conditions, you would get a 5-fold increase in the amount of ginger or turmeric that you had planted to what you would harvest. And then the other benefit of growing it yourself is that what you get is a baby version of the plant. So it doesn't have that papery kind of husk on it like you would be getting in the grocery store. It's very tender and fine grained and doesn't need to be skinned at all. It's really just the most wonderful thing to be able to cook with. Yeah, or make, any sort of beverages. And then if you have an excess, it's really easy to freeze, too. And then you can use it chopped or grated over the winter. So that's always one of my favorite treats and more fun kind of novel things to grow out in the herb garden.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks again for that question. Ron in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes, I have one of these vacuum sealers, you know, an electric appliance that
yeah.
you can draw air out of a special bag. Could you preserve a lot of herbs by vacuum sealing them in a special bag like that?
Yes, you would still need to do some sort of initial processing of them, similar to like what you would be doing to store herbs other ways. So, you know, herbs that you were drying dry down to where they get kind of crispy, but then store them in the vacuum bag after that. And I would imagine that that would really help preserve the flavor and the freshness. Also, especially for the freezer, I know a lot of people love those vacuum bags. So there are some herbs that are especially well-suited to freezing.
Which ones?
Specifically ones that don't dry very well. So in my mind, if you think of some of the more leafy kind of succulent herbs like basil or parsley or cilantro, if you dry them, they really kind of just taste and smell like hay, I think. So typically some of those kind of more specialty, you know, sort of aromatic, I always think that herbs that are suited to drying are the ones that already seem kind of dry in the first place. So if you think of your Mediterranean herbs, lavender, rosemary, thyme, marjoram, those dry well. But then parsley, basil, cilantro, those are good candidates for freezing. So I would think that that vacuum sealer would be a real friend to you context. Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for that question. Let's go to Celia in Oshkosh next. Hi, Celia.
Hi, we're back to Mandevillas. I bring it in every year. This is my third year, and I have it in a south window. It's sitting up on a stool, so it gets good light. I don't trim it back. I could. It does not seem to get leggy, but it continues to bloom, and then when the weather gets nice, I refresh the soil a little bit, and I put it back out there. So it's going to go on year number four, and I don't. I've had great success with it. A little bit of leaf drop, but not much.
That's awesome, and good to hear that it still has flowers, too, throughout the winter, because that's such a tropical-looking flower. I'd imagine that just really brightens up the days.
Yeah, Celia, thank you so much. And
yeah,
do you water it much, or what do you do?
I water it as needed, not overwater it.
Yeah.
It's next to a 100-year-old Hoya plant in the window.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's just amazing. It came with the house.
I was going to say, you haven't been growing it its whole life. It must have come with a house.
No. But it's just fun to continue with them and not get rid of them, you know, if you can.
Yeah.
And start fresh. We're recycling in its finest, reuse.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much. You must be a good gardener. Thank you, Celia. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Shelley emailed, she noticed rose hips on a couple of her roses this fall, wondering what she can prepare with them. And, are they kind of difficult to use?
I think people typically use rose hips either like in any sort of kind of water-based application. So typically you would be drying them first so you can kind of keep them through the winter, and then chop or slightly crush them to include in like a herbal tea blend. They can also lend a really nice color and are high in vitamin C. Just from an ornamental standpoint, they're really pretty if you can clip them and use them in like winter container arrangements, that sort of thing. And then I know people would do this, but I haven't personally, is you could try doing like a herbal vinegar or maybe even some sort of oil infusion that might be good for like a cosmetic, but that I'm not as familiar with.
Okay, there we go. Gary called, couldn't stay with us, but wonders, do you have any tips for growing tulips in pots?
Yes, certainly. We do a ton of forced bulbs like that at Ulbrich that we can incorporate into our planters in the spring. So what you'll want to do is around this time of year, as you're able to purchase the tulips, sink them, plant them into a, typically it would be a plastic container, and plant them about at the same depth that you would as if you're planting them in the ground. So put them in, you know, a 4 to 6 inch deep container with some fairly good potting soil. And then what you want to do is you want to protect them from too much winter cold, but also give them an experience as if they were going through an actual winter. So all we do at Ulbrich is we take those pots that we put the tulips into, and then we just heel them into a garden bed. So we dig a trench or a pit that's about, you know, again, 6 inches deep or so, line up all of our pots in the bottom of that pit, and then cover the rest over with soil and then even a little bit of extra mulch on the top. And then when spring comes, about as early as things are loosened up enough for you to be able to get back into that pit, bring them out and out into the sun. And then they're fun to just stage on their own. Sometimes we use the tulips along with other plants in a container arrangement, which is really fun, especially if you have pest problems in your yard, like rabbits love tulips. So growing them in a pot is an easy way to keep them up out of reach of the pests. But one thing that you do want to be careful about is, you know, if your pot is situated above the surface of the ground, it's probably going to freeze solid over the winter. So that's why it's really important to whatever you're going to be putting the tulips into, have it be heeled into the soil versus just exposed above ground, because if those bulbs freeze solid in the soil, then they'll just die. And then you won't have any of those tulips that you were looking forward to. But it is really very easy. And also that technique works spectacularly well for a huge variety of bulbs. So we do daffodils, crocus, fritillary, hyacinth, kind of you name it, following that similar technique.
You must have a pretty long trench.
Oh my gosh. I think the all told in the past 3 weeks, we planted out 15,000 bulbs at Ulbrich. Yeah, we had a huge planting along our long walk, which is runs parallel to our new visitor center. We just add more and more bulbs every year, and it's just the expectation of seeing them next spring is just thrilling. We use a bulb auger and corded drills, so you can, you know, get one person can drill probably over 1,000 holes in one day. And then we have our amazing volunteers come behind and put bulbs in the holes, and it's really exciting. It's fun.
Scott in Galloway, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I have a question. I bring a lot of plants in and overwinter them in my basement, and I always seem to get fungus gnats come in from, they carry in the soil of root aphids. I am organic, and I don't want to do any damage to the beneficial microbes in the soil, the bacteria, fungus, protozoa, nematodes. Is there anything I can use that will not do damage to the beneficials, but will take out the ones I want to get rid of?
I personally cannot speak to that based on my own experience. The only thing that I really know about fungus gnats is that they like a lot of moisture. So the more that you can, you know, kind of ride the wave of letting things dry down a little bit before you overwinter them is good. I did recently hear on one of Larry's shows a few weeks ago about applying actually a nematodal treatment to the potting soil, which would knock out the fungus gnats. I forget who your guest was that had been talking about that.
But P.J. Leash, maybe.
Yeah, it was probably within the past month or so. And I can't remember the details on that, but that might be something to just check out as far as... it was the expert on IPM and beneficial insects that you had on within the past, six weeks or so.
On Garden Talk on Friday. You could actually go back to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, and you could look that up, Scott, or anybody else for that matter, in our, you know, past shows.
Yeah, it might have even been on a different gardening podcast, because I do tend to listen to quite a lot of them. But I think that you could just check out something about treating potting soil with beneficial nematodes for fungus gnats. And I definitely heard something about this just within the past several weeks. So, and you know, there's a wide world of just IPM and beneficial insect treatments out there. And one of the themes is those things are becoming more accessible for home garden scale usages. So you might find a lot of other nifty things that have application in your gardens.
Yeah. Scott, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Aaron Presley, our guest today, a horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. You can join in 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Aaron Presley, horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens. We've originally started talking about growing herbs, and we're still on that. We're getting questions about it, but she can take other questions as well. She cares for the herb garden, but also the wildflower and the pond gardens as well. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. And she's brought me another drink, and it's toasted fig leaf French soda. And it is fantastically good.
Doesn't that sound high-end? Yeah.
Oh, man.
We have a number of figs are a really fun crop that people can actually grow pretty successfully in Wisconsin. At Olbrich, we typically bring ours into the greenhouse or overwinter them in a semi-dormant state in the winter. But I know that there's a lot of people. I live in the Greenbush neighborhood here in Madison, which is old, had a lot of Italian immigrants. Mm-hmm. And so I've heard a lot of stories about people successfully growing the figs in ground, too, by kind of making a trench at this time of year and then healing the whole plant kind of over into the trench, insulating the top, and then keeping the figs alive that way. So we get some decent crops of figs, fig fruit throughout the summer. But the fig leaves, additionally, also have a really amazing flavor.
Wow.
That's brought out by toasting them a little bit in the oven. And they kind of get a little crispy. And then they release this fragrance that I think of it as a combination of like coconut and green tea. It's kind of like a matcha-esque, almost like vegetal component.
I was about to say it. There's a coconut type flavor in
yes.
there that's really good.
It's just incredible. And then that flavor, it is a little bit subtle, so it's good to bring it out in a simple syrup works well. Otherwise, I really like it with dairy. So some people will use the toasted fig leaves then to infuse. In this case, I did cream for the French soda, and then also an infused simple syrup, or like creme brulee or ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I did make ice cream one time, and that just like took forever in a day. I'm never making homemade ice cream ever again. But the flavor is just unmatched.
So unbelievable.
Again, just another. I mean, herbs are so versatile, and a lot of times the first application that comes to your mind is really only the tip of the iceberg as far as what most herbs can offer you.
It is fantastic, and I'm almost going to need your recipe for this. The exact, you don't really, do you have an exact recipe?
I am not a recipe person, but I could definitely put something up for you folks, because it is kind of a specialty offering, so I can make sure that you folks get that up on your site if you're lucky enough to have a fig plant in the first place, which hopefully you know they are becoming more prevalent out in the trade. And I've been hearing about introductions of dwarf figs that would be a lot easier for people to bring in and out. I think fig nominal was one of the more recent introductions I've heard on, so I'm looking forward to trying to add that to our collection in the next year or two.
Well, it's delicious, no doubt about it. Tyrone in Milwaukee, we go to you now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you, my friend. Long time no talk to and speak with. It's good to be in your presence once again, you and your guests, and everyone that's in the sound of my voice. Have a wonderful harvest and holiday season to everyone that's in the sound of my voice moving forward into the new year. I appreciate this conversation we're having. You know, I love all the herbal teas that I can get my hands on. I love things. That sounds good. I'd love to taste that myself. I tell you, that sounds good, what you got going on over there that she's giving you there.
It's good.
So, I want to be brief here because I know there's other callers coming in. I would love for us to tap into our Oh, well, I want to make sure I word it properly, you know, because I can be spiritual and political here, so don't be angry with me. But, you know, most of the time when I have a conversation with our tribal indigenous brothers and sisters, they make a point that we don't belong, or the earth doesn't belong to us. We belong to the earth. And that sticks with me so deeply, you know, heart and spirit, that, you know, I'm wondering, what can we do as a country, you know, with teas and medicine and everything else, to include our indigenous and tribal brothers and sisters more, to help us get to a better point with climate change and understanding where we are with herbs and different things like that, you know, to a bigger picture, you know, other than just mm-hmm. herbs and but medicines and everything, you know. I think we've got an untapped source here that we can do a better job with if we be more inclusive with everyone. So that's something moving forward through the holidays. You know, let's include everyone, and we may get to a better place if we see and hear and listen to what other people have to say, our tribal indigenous brothers and sisters, as well as the Chinese, the Japanese. I love all kind of good-tasting stuff.
Yeah. Oh, man. So Tyrone, this is awesome.
I'm going to listen to you over the air, but, yeah, let's be more inclusive and love on each other.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, Tyrone. Well, comments now.
Yeah, I love, thank you so much for offering that statement. And yeah, like blessings on bringing that to the forefront, because one thing that the public garden community and Ulbricht specifically is really working on is making spaces that people feel included and that all voices are heard and that we are learning from so much knowledge that has taken, you know, millennia to cultivate. So one of the really neat projects that I've been involved with at Ulbricht over the past 2 years is the Indigenous Garden. So we've been working with local Ho-Chunk tribal members, and specifically shout out to my twin flame, Rita Peters. She's 25. She's a Madison College student of Ho-Chunk and Menominee ancestry. And so she's been my partner in this amazing garden journey over the past 2 years, where we've been growing Indigenous foods and then trying to just really highlight Indigenous food ways and cultural significance of food for people. So we have hosted milkweed soup tastings. So actually the flower buds of the common milkweed that grows, you know, basically in the ditch, people see it all the time, is a really treasured Ho-Chunk food. And so actually even tomorrow at the Meadow Ridge Library here in Madison, we're doing a cooking demonstration. Oh. So it's a cooking show by Aaron and Rita. And we're making milkweed soup. And then, you know, obviously there's a lot of messages about seasonality, respecting the earth, sustainable harvesting that go along with all of that. So that has just been an amazing project. We recently did a sweetgrass braiding workshop as well, with sweetgrass that we harvested at Ulbricht, and all of the good intention and, you know, messages and important significance behind that. And then next year, we had, over this past summer, we had a super awesome intern, Sabrina Herr, and she and I are brainstorming for a Hmong-style garden.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, because we're so lucky in Wisconsin to have a high percentage of Hmong residents here, and who are amazing gardeners, too, and really just, you know, offer up the best stuff at the farmers markets and have such a wide diversity of interesting crops that they grow as well. So Sabrina and I are brainstorming for our garden next year, and she's also an English major and has a really interesting way of weaving storytelling into her garden ideas. So oh. I know she was already telling me about some design ideas that she had that had elements of like Hmong folklore incorporated, and I just can't wait. So it's
now
such...
where is this garden going to be part of Ulbricht?
This is all at Ulbricht, yeah. So we are, I like to think of us as a small garden with a big heart, and we just are trying so hard to make sure that you know, everybody feels like it's a place for them, and that all voices are heard and we can learn from each other and all be better gardeners.
Yeah, that's a wonderful.
So thank you, Tyrone. That's a really, yeah, thoughtful statement. I appreciate you putting that message out there.
So you're going to be doing that this coming year?
For next summer, that's the plan. So the Indigenous Garden, we've grew for 2 years. So we just this past week kind of put the garden to bed, and we saved a lot of seeds and We have some different speaking engagements and stuff that are coming up over the winter. And then we'll be moving into a whole different garden phase and exploration next year.
So the native garden will go away and then the Hmong garden will come in its place.
Yes. And we are looking at ways to, you know, nothing like that really ever goes away. So we're keeping some of the signage. Additionally, as a part of that project, we had the Ho-Chunk language is actually really endangered. So I think the most recently I had heard was there are about 200 people who speak the Ho-Chunk language, and only 50 of them are the older people who actually grew up speaking the language. So the Ho-Chunk people as a cultural institution and as a nation have been putting a lot of resources into making sure the language is preserved. And so one of the things we did as a part of our garden is we have a YouTube channel that has the names of all of the plants that are in English and Ho-Chunk posted on the Olbrich YouTube page.
The amazing Aaron Presley, horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, our guest for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Aaron Presley, horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. We've been zeroing in on herbs a bit, but she takes other questions as well because she's got a broad range of expertise. So questions for her, join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And I want to get to a few of our emails. But before I do that, I also want to remind people about the Herb Fair, which is coming up next Saturday.
Correct. So that is Saturday, November 5th, and it is free admission and is at Olbrich Gardens in Madison. Runs from 9 a.m. to 3 in the afternoon and is sponsored by the fabulous organization, the Madison Herb Society. And they put together a great lineup of speakers that are covering a diversity of topics. The theme of the Herb Fair this year is easy herbs for everyone. So it's kind of just making everybody believe and just know that they are an herb gardener at heart, which is true of all of us. And so we have speakers from Madison, Venice Williams from Alice's Garden in Milwaukee. There's 22 different vendors that are selling all sorts of herbal baked goods and, you know, body products and herbal teas. So you name it. We're doing an outdoor herb garden walk at 2:30 with myself. So I've been trying to really showcase all the things that are still out there, even kind of this, you know, as people feel like fall is winding down, there's still plenty of herbs out there to be had. Even up through Thanksgiving, there's tons of fresh stuff that you can be bringing into your garden and incorporating into your seasonal meals. So the fun just never ends.
So that's Saturday, November 5th from 9 in the morning to 3 p.m. And it's free. Just walk right in.
For sure. And the the outdoor gardens at Olbrich are always free. And then our conservatory has a small fee. It's free to members. And another thing I wanted to mention is that we've been really working on, we've always had a program whereby people can have free access to our conservatory, but it just wasn't very well publicized or known about. So we're trying to kind of highlight the fact that if you really have anything that would qualify you for any social services as far as food share or Medicaid, unemployment benefits, Head Start, anything like that, you don't have to show any kind of card or anything. Just roll up and say, you know, I'm here for a donor-funded pass or a reduced fee conservatory admission, and we'll let you right in because we just want everybody to be able to partake of all the good stuff happening in the gardens.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place. We've had a number of emails I just wanted to get to. Remember, someone asked about how do I keep the spiders away? And I can't remember the plants. But anyway, she just wanted to keep the spiders away. And Osage, a listener called to suggest Osage Orange.
Oh, yes. I have heard that those have kind of a insect-repelling properties. And they do actually smell pretty good to, like, a human nose. So kind of a neat thing. And they have sort of a spooky Halloween-y-looking appearance, too, kind of like a green brain. So you're really hitting a lot of marks by getting a hold of a couple of those for your house.
Anne in Milwaukee emailed that she hasn't had any luck overwintering lavender inside. She's done rosemary and parsley with no problem. Would it be better to sink the pot outside instead?
Yeah, I think that is a reasonable way to go about it. One thing that always helps if you're trying to overwinter herbs in your home is have them growing in a pot outside for the whole summer and then just bring the whole pot in versus having a plant that was growing in the ground and then you try to dig it up, repot it, and bring it in at the same time. That's kind of a little bit of too much transition at one point. So, yeah, but that idea of just sinking whatever container you had it in, burying it kind of like we were talking about the tulips so that it feels like it's in just a normal in-ground situation over the winter. And then for that, you could also maybe additionally think of, we had talked about for the tulips, like mulching over the top, but the lavender is going to appreciate good drainage and not having a lot of moisture around it over the winter. So I would go light on the mulch or even use like a layer of gravel or something like that over the top if you were attempting that.
And let's see, Ben in Mayville emailed to ask, what herbs are good for first-time gardeners and are cat-friendly?
Cat-friendly. So I, in my experience, I do not have a cat, but I doubt that cats would really be interested in messing with any of your herbs just because they are kind of pungent in their properties. But it would certainly be worth just checking over, you know, some online lists or something like that. And then as far as herbs that are good for first timers, I mean, I think really any of them. One thing that I do sort of caution people against is there are certain herbs that are easier or harder to grow from seed. So I usually just tell people, unless you have a dedicated seed starting setup or you're accustomed to growing things from seeds, just go out to the garden center and buy a plant and save yourself the hassle indoors. Again, I was, you know, talking about kind of like the various usages and long season interest of parsley. That's one of my favorites, very versatile. A few ones that are easy to grow from seed are, you know, cilantro or basil, super simple. The Mediterranean herbs, as far as being easy care and not needing a lot of water, are good. Another really fun plant that can be used as a houseplant and has a lot of versatile applications is actually bay leaves. So it's really, you know, you can find bay plants at most garden centers in the spring. They're easy to bring inside, not very finicky in making the transition from inside to outside. And then as the plant gets bigger, you're able to have a pretty consistent supply of bay leaves throughout the whole year, as well as having a very stately looking, really pretty plant as well.
Very good. We have another tip here from Ellie. For fungus gnats, she covers the top of the potting soil with sand. And that, she says, works great for keeping the fungus gnats out.
I can see that being helpful. Maybe it kind of prevents, if there was anything in there, prevents them from being able to actually emerge from the surface of the soil and get out into the atmosphere. But yeah, sounds like a good tip.
Carol called to say that cinnamon sprinkled on soil will keep fungus gnats in pots away. So there's another one.
All right. Everybody's got on their mind bringing their stuff in for the winter, it sounds like.
Okay. Kate called to say, when you make rosehip tea, here's an idea or suggestion. Make sure to remove the seeds and also don't use super hot water. It will lessen the vitamin C.
Oh, nice. Good tip.
There's another good tip. And let's see, we got more tips here. I've just got to scroll down on my computer screen here a little bit.
See, this is what I mean, where I was really glad personally that the theme of the herb fair was easy herbs for everyone. Because I was like, okay, easy, everyone, like I can hit those marks. But sometimes I feel like the world of, you know, people who are really well-versed in herbs is just so huge, and there's so much knowledge that I feel like a novice every day. And it's so exciting to hear everybody's just different takes on the same subject and all of their various botanical lore they've accumulated.
Grant emailed. He recently discovered a fantastic Mexican herb called Pipicha? P-I-P-I-C-H-A.
That one I am not familiar with. Does he give any further?
It resembles cilantro with some citrus, mostly lemon. And he was just wondering, is it easy to grow this in Wisconsin? But P-I-P-I-C-H-A.
Okay.
Mexican herb.
The one, yeah. Sometimes it's interesting if you look at, okay, so this is porphyllum. I have grown this before, and it is kind of like somewhat marketed as a alternative to cilantro. The one thing that I think is where cilantro will bolt pretty quickly. So, you know, the plants go to seed quickly. The pipicha, has a longer growing season, and it doesn't bolt like in the hot weather like cilantro. So, and I have not grown that from seed myself. Our greenhouse grower started that herself, so I'm not sure how easy it was to get started from a seed. But I will say that when I had it in the garden, it grew really rapidly and well through the whole summer without bolting, similarly to cilantro.
And let's see, let's go right down the line here. Adam emailed, he just finished having a spring pond created. Some watercress is starting to appear, but it's otherwise it's bare. And he's looking for ideas and sources for Wisconsin native pond plants and suggestions for the adjacent slope, for the adjacent wet prairie abutting the pond as well.
Okay. As far as the, I am not a huge, I do manage our pond at Ulbrich, but I am not a real aquatic specialist, so I don't know a lot of sources for plants. But as far as the pond adjacent edges, we do have a lot of areas at Ulbrich that are like a wet meadow. And so there's a wide number of species of sedges that would do really well in that type of environment. A really good plant for a kind of a boggy edge like that is the swamp milkweed, Asclepias incarnata, which is also a host for the monarch larvae. So what I would suggest maybe to start establishing a plant palette for that is go on the website of one of, we have amazing native plant suppliers here in Wisconsin, such as Prairie Nursery or Prairie Moon, which is out of Winona, Minnesota. And their catalogs have really great ways to be able to filter different type of growing conditions for the plants that you're seeking out. So you could hop on one of their websites, then do a filter for, you know, sunny versus part shade, and then definitely click those boxes for wet or like rain garden style plants and just get a plethora of ideas.
Yeah, you will. Michael in Wausau, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hey, Aaron. We have a question, Lee and I, about any native herbs in Wisconsin with your experience in native garden planting, as well as William.
So there's some really good native herbs, and this is something that we kind of explored in the concept of the indigenous garden as well. Some of the really good ones that you'll see growing around all the time are the monardas. So there's like Monarda fistulosa, which is the wild bergamot that has kind of a citrusy but sagey fragrance as well. Wild ginger, Asarum canadense, which is a really early flowering plant here in Wisconsin, low-growing, really durable ground cover as well. That is called wild ginger because it has a rhizome that has a really nice gingery flavor and can be used as a ginger substitute. There's also Acorus calamus, which is another, speaking to the kind of the sedge meadow style plant, that has some sort of gingery flavors as well. You know, I do have a really soft spot in my heart for the American wild ginseng. So never to be harvested from the wild, but definitely a highly treasured native herbal plant, almost to the level of, I mean, I would call that like a herbal rock star, or, you know, just like the pinnacle of what herbs can represent, both in their applications and just the folklore surrounding them. So and it is interesting in the conversation about herbs. I think a lot of us and are trained to kind of go to what we think of in the grocery store, what you see in like the seed catalogs. And a lot of those are really European imported plants. And then if you kind of are able to just switch your mindset a little bit to what's really growing around you, you'll see just a whole host of other possibilities there.
Yeah. Michael, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sandra emailed, they were hiking in the woods yesterday, and they came across a small tree with limbs that had what they thought was a kind of woolly aphids. You know anything about woolly aphids?
Woolly aphids. I have been seeing recently some little white bugs on trees outside that to me look kind of like a mealybug almost. So, but I cannot speak with any, you know, this is a pure speculation about what it was on and what it was doing. So, but I typically would say, you know, anything that you're seeing outside is just kind of part of the circle of life and is meant to be there. And some, you know, one thing I noticed in the spring that's really interesting when we move plants outside that came from our greenhouses indoors. Sometimes when they go outside, they do have various, you know, mealybugs or aphids and scales. And it's interesting to watch the woodpeckers go seek out the pests that are on the plants that have been growing inside all winter. And it's fun to, I know I have a oleander that I bring out every year, and it typically has a little bit of funk on it from the winter. And then those woodpeckers just get right on there and clean it right up.
I love it. Oh, man. Veronica emailed, and she'd like to know more about growing figs, specifically the Fig Normal variety you mentioned. Is this an inside plant, or will it grow outside?
Yeah, so, and the Fig Nominal, I think I'm getting that name right. I had just heard about it and seen the first marketing materials coming up. So I'm getting, like, pretty pumped about looking for that one. But there's a wide variety of other fig varieties that do well in our climate, but they are definitely plants that need to be moved inside in some form over the winter. You're going to have a real struggle, I mean, overwintering them outside unless you have very specific conditions or certain cultivars is not really going to be an option. But what we really do is we're lucky enough to have some mildly heated greenhouses. So if you have like a sun porch or an area where it is 40-ish in the winter and a little bit of light, you can keep your fig plant almost in a little bit more of a growing state. And then if you just even need to just stick it down in the basement, that'll work too. And just water it very minimally. It'll drop all of its leaves. And then it's really amazing early in the spring how quickly the plants take a little while to leaf out, but they start setting a new crop of figs very, very early on. So basically move that plant out into the light and heat as soon as we're past the first frost danger. Give it the hottest, you know, sunniest spot you can put it in, and you have a good possibility of getting, I'm not going to say we get like buckets of figs, but the ones that we get are, you know, it's just a really decadent treat to be able to nab those in midsummer. Yeah. And they're just beautiful plants as well. Also the, you know, we were just talking about the toasted fig leaf,
French soda.
Yeah, French soda. So the plant has a little bit more multi-purpose applications other than just the fruits, too.
Yeah, for sure. Grant emailed back, and he's a bread baker, and he used pepecha in cornbreads and corn bagels. And he says it's also great in salsa and in scrambled eggs.
Oh, nice.
And Mike sent an email as well, and his cat likes cat mint, There's something called cat mint and cat nip.
That makes sense, yes.
Catnip, of course. Is there a cat that doesn't like catnip? I haven't found one yet. Oh, and Bill in Oregon emailed that woolly aphids will create colonies on alder trees, usually near wetlands. And so if that person wanted to Google woolly alder aphid.
Oh, great.
They would probably come up with the what they were looking at from the outside. Let's see if there was another one. I think I got through all of them. Well, here we are. We got about a minute and a half to go. The things are going great at Olbrich. The main event is on the 5th. Other events or things that are going on there that. If I just want to go over there tomorrow afternoon and wander around, what am I going to see?
Oh, please do. Actually, we're the fall color has just been hanging on spectacularly. So there's still lots of leaves on the trees, especially out in the woodland garden, kind of in my area of the garden. There's lots of leaves on the maples. The witch hazels are starting to bloom. We still have flowers on the later asters. A lot of the grasses are turning fall colors. We have beautiful collection of, I know you had Mark Dwyer on recently talking about ornamental grasses, and we have a spectacular collections of ornamental grasses that are looking awesome. So there just is really, the weather's looking great. Please come check it out and enjoy the garden.
And I do want to get one more plug in for Gleam.
Yes, we're down to the last two nights. So it's Friday and Saturday, this, what is it today, the 28th and 29th, and going from 7 to 10, and then that's all she wrote until next year.
Well, it's always a wonderful, wonderful experience. I get to talk to a lot of people when I've gone through there.
Oh, yes. Everybody's friendly and a good mood, and you never know who you're going to run into out in the garden. It's just a, spectacular place to be any time of year.
I was surprised that last time, well, I met a lot of people who listened to this program, so it was a lot of fun for me, and I'll... Either tonight or tomorrow night, I'll be over there to take a visit through Gleam.
Excellent.
Always a pleasure, Erin. Thank you so much for taking time to be. And thank you so much for this. You're going to tell me how to make this toasted fig leaf French soda.
I will. We'll get it up on the website for everybody.
All right. We'll do that. So you can check that out for, we'll try to put it under today's date. The ideas at WPR.org/Larry and go to the program notes. Once she gets it to me, we'll put it up.
I'll put it at the top of my to-do list.
Thanks, Erin. Look forward to another visit.
Appreciate it. Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Erin Presley is a horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. She's always a delight to have on the show. She's full of enthusiasm and spirit. I love it. Taking a look ahead to Monday, Bassam Shakashiri is going to be back to talk about the science of Halloween. What do you think of that? Then the weather guys will be in to tell us about some new climate change statistics. We're having a little bit of a positive impact in some areas, so they'll talk about that. That's Monday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.